Hello and welcome to our insulin resistance practitioner training support call. I'm excited to have you guys here, and I'm here and available to talk about whatever you need support with. Hopefully you're making your way through the program. I'd love to hear where you're at and if you're getting ready to apply for your certification yet. We started this back, we started back in July, I guess. Officially, we started a little bit earlier than that, but I think July, August, September, October. I can't remember how many calls you guys get from this program, but I think we're on our third or fourth or whatever. I'm so excited to have you here. I was excited at Shine to meet some of you who are there and to hear some amazing results that some are having, both with your own personal health, but also with clients who have just been struggling for a really long time, and now you have the key to unlock it, and boom, things are happening. So it's always exciting for me to hear that sort of stuff because I'm so committed to, you know what I mean, making the world a better place, helping you guys as practitioners to be able to reach people in a whole new way, in a deeper way. And I personally think insulin resistance is one of the most overlooked areas. I mean, a lot of people talk about keto, and keto can help with insulin resistance, but a lot of people are not doing the measuring that we're doing. I mean, I bring this up in circles of colleagues. Everybody is just they're just after me for asking questions because nobody else is really doing the whole postprandial glucose mapping. They're still kind of locked into the, you know, how's the glucose 2 hours after a meal, or sending people in to get a glucose tolerance test. So I just am excited to have you guys here and on this journey with me, and I'm open to questions. So I'll start with the questions that have been typed in advance. And the way you can open up and ask me a question is to do a *2 on your telephone keypad. And if you're on the web call, which most of you are, I would say you just press the button that says raise hand. And if you want to ask a question without talking, you can put it into the chat or the Q&A. If the call gets busy and we have a lot of activity on the chat with conversations, it's possible that your question might get lost, and all you need to do, if that happens, is copy-paste it into the box called Q&A. That's a one-way street. The beauty of the chat is that other people can answer your question before I even get there if they have the answer for you, and they'll type it in. And the disadvantage of the chat is it moves fast. The Q&A is a one-way street. You have more privacy if you wanted to ask a call, you know, and said, hey, you know, don't say my name out loud or whatever. So that's the advantage of that. But the disadvantage is it's just a one-way street. All right, so I am going to start with the Q&A. So remember, *2 on your telephone will raise your hand. And then if you are on the web call, I think there's a button that says, just says raise hand. And typing into the chat. So we have some folks on chat. Martha hears, Terry, Gail, Chris. Okay, cool. So I'm going to start, Chris, with the people who typed in advance of the call. That way they can get their questions answered right at the beginning. There's only 3, and I will then go ahead and start with your chat question. All right, Kiki, sorry I have to miss. It's Yom Kippur Eve. Yeah, I hope we still have another IRSP tea call coming up. I'd have to look at my schedule. I'm not sure, but I know that you have at least 5 months of the office hours calls, so you'll have that at least. I don't know what number we're on, but. Barbara, how can a 5-day water fast be done safely as to not incur muscle wasting? What makes muscle wasting in general, and how is it detected on labs? Lynn covered this with me yesterday, and honestly, it went over my head. Okay, so here's the deal. So I don't get concerned about muscle wasting in a 5-day fast. You might be concerned about it if you start out thin and you don't have much muscle and you're doing a much longer fast. But the truth of the matter is, in most cases, a water fast, the benefits of a water fast outweigh the issues with muscle wasting. So, for example, when I was back, I think I was like almost 30, I was about 29 years old, I embarked on a 28-day water fast. I went to a fasting location, and they monitored me to make sure I wasn't getting into trouble, because with 28 days, you know, you can get into trouble. Muscle wasting wasn't an issue. I started out at 115 pounds, so I wasn't heavy to begin with, and I got down to 92 pounds. Yes, I lost muscle. There's no way not to lose muscle in 28 days if not eating. But the thing was, I also lost whatever fat stores, whatever fat around my organs, anything that was toxic residue, I was able to release. And so once I started eating again, I was really careful about eating only whole, fresh foods and, right balance and all. And I was able to gain the weight back within probably 4 months. And I did it gradually. I did it healthfully. And I started working out. I went to the gym. And I'm not an emaciated person. I'm not quite up to that 115 again, but I'm close to that. And I feel really good. And this is like 35 years later. So with a longer fast, yeah, there will be, but sometimes the benefits way outweigh the risks. Now, for 5-day fasts, I do 5-day fasts. I actually do them once a month or every 6 weeks or so. I haven't noticed muscle wasting when I do them. I keep up my exercise while I'm doing it. I don't do heavy-duty aerobics. That's going to, require more glucose and could be breaking down more muscle. I do muscle training, so I do weight training. I'll do body weight training like push-ups or planks or squats or things like that. I just don't worry about it. That's all. I just don't worry about it. What causes muscle wasting is that you require a certain amount of protein every day to recycle and to make enzymes and to make hormones and to make neurotransmitters. And if you don't have enough of those amino acids because you're fasting, body has to get it from somewhere. Well, initially, there are branched chain amino acids, so you can break down glycogen stores and you can create the energy you need that way. You're still going to have a little bit of need for about lose a little bit of muscle, but I don't see it as a big concern. So what I do is I just make sure that once you start eating again, that you're eating really well balanced, that you're eating in such a way that it doesn't disrupt your stomach acid, so you're not absorbing your protein as well, your amino acids as well, and you just go with it. And I think that I honestly think that doing some of the muscle, the building exercises helps to recycle, and you can end up with, not losing much in the way of muscle. So it's not really worth worrying about. A lot of people who do it. If you go to Fasting with a Purpose Facebook group with Dr. Pompa, he holds his, I think, probably four times a year. And he and his wife do fasting more often than that, but they lead a group through it. It's a great way to do it and get some support, fastingforapurpose.com. And, but they do it and they're not emaciated or, losing muscle either. So I'm not concerned about it. Barbara, I have a potential client with Parkinson's in the late 70s, wants to know what labs to ask their doctor to run, then help in understanding them. Can you suggest a list of blood tests I can recommend? It's been at least a year since labs were run and this person experiencing both mental and physical decline. So I would be looking, there's a number of things I would be looking for. Some of the things in a conventional kind of setting, like just the everyday lab tests that you can get, you want a full chem panel that includes a full thyroid panel that also includes all of the thyroid numbers, TSH plus T4, free T4, free T3, and all your antibodies. You want to make sure that there isn't an underlying autoimmune process underlying this. I would be doing C-reactive protein. I would be doing homocysteine. I'd be doing all the blood sugar stuff, so hemoglobin A1C, fasting insulin, even C-peptide is a possibility. We want to look at why is this person developed Parkinson's. We're not about this for that. What herbs do we take? What tests do we do, et cetera, for Parkinson's? But what are the underlying imbalances that led there? I'd be looking really carefully at the digestion, asking a lot of questions about stool testing, frequency, because frequently years of constipation can be a precursor to Parkinson's. We want to look at that. Plus, we know that Parkinson's involves a deficiency in dopamine, and dopamine is one of the top chemicals in the gut, and there's more dopamine produced in the gut there than there is in the brain, so there's that whole gut-brain axis. You'd be looking at stress markers. So in addition to the standard chemistry that I talked about, I would be looking at like a Dutch test or some sort of an adrenal saliva test to see the cortisol levels and see if that's involved. If they have digestive issues, which they probably do, I probably would do suggest, you know, if the person has unlimited funds, let's just give them a whole list. If not, then you can discern, but you can also get a stool test, a comprehensive stool analysis to see what their digestion looks like. There are neurotransmitter tests that you can run and see. They're usually a better indication of neurotransmitters in the gut than in the brain. But the ones I would start with are the ones I mentioned, and maybe an OAT test, organic acids test, to see what some of those pathways are. And that looks at some of the dopamine and other pathways. But really the whole idea is, what's causing the Parkinson's, right? And also tests for toxins. Great Plains has a toxin load test. I forget what the exact name of the test is, but they have a test for toxin load and for glyphosate. So I'd be looking at that. So you really want to get at it. You may not need all of those, but the first thing you really want to do is a comprehensive history to find out what's going on in other systems in the body before you recommend lab tests. I don't ever recommend lab tests before I get a full history, you know, except in like a specific thing. This person's on thyroid medication and, you know, okay, here's the thyroid testing, or suspicious of blood sugar testing. But usually you want to get a history before you decide on what tests to be running. All right, so Chris had some questions. I have a client with severe diarrhea, and endovitis, I don't know what that means, insulin resistance, as per symptoms, not sleeping well, got coma. Been doing great 10 days with just two episodes of diarrhea after 4 months of 5 to 7. I'd like to support her adrenals and blood glucose. I'm thinking about zinc and B5, ashwagandha. What do you recommend? I've only been addressing diet and just introduced L-glutamine and probiotics, digestive enzymes, nothing else. Okay. Again, right? You know, are you addressing all the basics of diet, getting her on, you know, gluten-free, low glycemic, the whole bit? I don't, you know, it's hard for me with that little information, right? She's severe diarrhea. It's getting better. You want to know what's going on in her gut. Zinc is certainly an issue, especially with gut dysbiosis, because zinc is important for a lot of the digestive function, and zinc is a very hard one to absorb when the digestive function is impaired. B5 is an important one for adrenal function. You'd like to support her adrenals. Does she show sign? You know, could very well be. Ashwagandha depends on, again, on what's going on with her, but she has thyroid issues especially. Ashwagandha is good if her adrenals are indeed disrupted. You need to look at the testing to know what time of day is best to do it. You just introduced L-glutamine and probiotics. Watch with L-glutamine, because not everybody tolerates it well. Those with particular SNPs in their genes, like the GAD, glutamic acid decarboxylase, can actually not do well with glutamine, some of them, and they get anxious. So watch. Anytime you add anything, just watch. So probiotics, digestive enzymes are great, and I would be looking at supporting her. If she has insulin resistance, then I would be looking at all the insulin resistance stuff that we talk about, the chromium, magnesium, DHA, for omega-3s, important. So, do I recommend from Terry, a fermented beetroot, an NDT product? What do you mean by an NDT product? I mean, fermented beetroot can be very helpful for lots of folks because it doesn't have the high sugar content that beet would, and the beet's a really good source of betaine, which will help support stomach acid, and it's also supportive for the liver and kidneys. Martha, what does muscle wasting actually look like as opposed to losing weight or fat? Yeah, that's a good question. So we'll often see someone, you know, that their muscle tone, like if they typically have, you know, arm tone and they suddenly have lots of flab or flappy skin around that, weakness, right? It doesn't not necessarily what it looks like, but also what it appears like. So they'll be going to the gym, but not really able to put on extra weight. And they may feel like weakness. That's muscle wasting would actually be manifesting in weakness. I'm not sure what you meant in NDT product, Terry. Debbie, do you have any idea what could cause intense maxillary sinus pain while fasting? The longest I've ever been able to do on water only is 48 hours. I felt so great and I wanted to continue, but I quit due to the sinus pain. So Debbie, sometimes when you're fasting, areas that you have had an issue with in the past, they get reactivated if they haven't been completely cleared out. So it's possible that you have a low-grade maxillary sinus infection that's been there a long time, and the fasting is getting your body to actually notice it and start to get rid of it. But without actually looking at you, I would say do a a mucus membrane, analysis to, take some of the mucus and have them culture it to see if there are any bacteria in there. Is it just pain or is there some drippiness? Is there congestion there? Those are the things that is it bilateral or unilateral? Those are things you'd want to know. But some of the ideas, it could be that you have a low grade infection in there and that's what's getting reactivated. Jill says, what about mood issues because of blood sugar drops with the long fast? If your body is metabolizing correctly, it doesn't matter if your blood sugar drops because your ketones are coming up. I've done many fasts and I see that, personally, my sugars sometimes go down in the 30s and I don't have any mood issues because my ketones are up. But typically when you get problems because of blood sugar drops, it's usually when somebody has a reactive hypoglycemia, so the sugar goes real high and then it comes down real low and there's some issues there and you're not keto adapting. But in a long fast, you get keto adapted, most people by the third day, fifth at the most. Nanette, I know this is not about insulin resistance, but I went to Shine and unable to watch the videos on the Shine page, only shows two videos. Right to help desk, I have no idea. Yes, all of them are available. And if you go to writetohelpdesk@drritamarie.com, they can help you. Barbara, thank you. Oh, you're welcome. Donna, what can cause blood sugar levels to rise if no food is consumed for 3 to 4 hours? Well, that is your body looking for sugar, and it's breaking down glycogen usually in the liver and the muscles. It could be protein, but it's breaking. Your body's going, oh, we need more sugar, and it's going and it's consuming and pulling that out. And it could be a liver issue as well. It could be, congestion in the liver. I'm insulin resistant, belly fat and fasting blood sugar 90s, early AM fasting 90s with no food, just lemon tea, recheck, raises it to 120. The other thing is stress, right? If you're stressed and if you have, just generally tend to have dysrhythmia of your cortisol. Like cortisol should be high in the morning and it comes down. So if you're having a super high blood sugar in the morning, it could be high cortisol. So I would certainly look at testing adrenals or doing a Dutch test or something like that. And then 1 hour postprandial plant-based meal rises to 130s, which is not much over the 120. So it could be the stress levels and it could be just that your body hasn't learned to adapt in between meals and it's dropping down. It could be over insulin, that you're making too much insulin and it just goes down. So those are the things that I would say are an issue with that. It could be an issue with that. So, doing the heart maths and the stress management and all that. Natural desiccated. So natural desiccated thyroid, I have to see a complete history of the person. Like, what are the numbers? And, what does it look like? What's the T3, T4 ratio, et cetera? And Lynn recommends Debbie can do a neti pot to help flush things out, and that's a possibility. Some people have never even heard of neti pots. Some people do them all the time. But, yeah, that's a good possibility as well. The maxillary sinus, you can't reach with a neti pot, though. Maxillary sinus is off to the right, to one of the other sides. Lynn, when you click the picture on, okay, so she's telling you about the, and Debbie says it doesn't seem to help. saw a webinar about putting a drop of biocidin in the saline nasal spray. Yeah, so that would be an antimicrobial. So if it is, there are some things. Thorne has a nasal spray that has quercetin and a homeopathic. That can be helpful. Certainly the biocidin. I tried citrus seed extract once in my neti pot and it really burned a lot. So, and I tried it a second time, you know, weeks later and the same thing. And I just have given up on that. Debbie says, I have two root canals on the upper left. I'm wondering if those are still infected. Yeah. So if you have two root canals on that same side that you're having the maxillary pain, that could be part of it as well. Now, here's the thing that I've noticed with anything like issues with teeth and gums and inflammation, fasting brings it down just so much more rapidly than anything else. So I would be looking at maybe trying to get some comfort when that pain comes up. And you can do that with, say, making a castor oil pack and putting it over it or putting a hot pack over it. There's a sinus drops. There's just an herbal kind of formula for the sinuses. And I think Herbalist and Alchemist has it. And I've used that with people where I'll just put a few drops and massage it into the area where they're having pain. But it could definitely be the root canal. So you might want to get checked out by a biological dentist who can look at that and maybe do some ozone and other things like that. Nanette, thanks. I did go to the right side. No, okay, I don't want to get involved with that. Do I have a product name for natural desiccated thyroid? Well, I mean, there's prescription forms of it. There's the Armor and there's Nature Throid and what's the other one? There's several of them that way. There are some companies that have it. If you go to Dr. Meridian Valley site, Dr. Jonathan Wright has a dispensary over there, and they have a product that is pretty high in the natural desiccated thyroid and pretty reliable in that. Let's see. Christina, if you test for nutritional deficiencies, how long do you have to stop your multivitamin? Does it matter? Yeah, so here's the deal with that. So first of all, testing for nutritional deficiencies is not as easy as just go to the lab and tell them to test your blood. Every single nutrient will have a different compartment where it's going to be appropriate, where it's going to be the right place to test for it. We go through that in extensive, excruciating detail in our micronutrients module in our NEPT program, where there are, for every nutrient, and I guess there's like 30 of them that we go over where they get absorbed and how, you know, what's the best way to measure them, et cetera. So a test like the NutraEval from Genova probably does the best testing assessments for those nutrients. It may not be all of them. That in combination with, say, an organic acid. Well, actually, it's included there. Never mind. So the NutraEval, but it's like a $600 test. Now, how long do you have to stop your multivitamin? Here's the thing. If you're trying to see how well your vitamins are doing you, then you wouldn't stop it at all. You'd just take the test. But usually that's on a retest. So the first time through, I usually want people to just see what their bodies are doing. The test should tell you, but generally speaking, I think around 72 hours, some of them a little bit longer. And I just sent the test I use. I mean, you can certainly do vitamin D, vitamin A, vitamin K. Those will show up in just the serum. Magnesium is a white blood cell test is the best, or red blood cell or white blood cell. SpectraCell is another test that you can do, but I don't like it as much as I like the NutraEval. Why does Trace Minerals Magnesium 400 taste so bitter? You know, with the trace minerals tend to be super concentrated, so you can't really use them as an indicator for your status. I find the trace minerals are very, very potent, and a lot of people can't tolerate, especially their zinc. They get nauseous from it. So you do have to be careful with that. Why does it taste so bitter? So there's a theory that when you do the right dilution of minerals and you test it and swish it in your mouth, that you can determine if your body needs it or if it's in excess. And generally speaking, it means you're in excess if it's tasting really bitter, but I don't think that the trace minerals are titrated properly for that. There's a company called Body Bio that has a kit that you can actually use to test, and I really highly recommend it. I've used it for years to give you a general guideline and also to give patients feedback. And some of our clients who are remote, they will buy the kits and then we'll take them through measuring that. Debbie says, thank you. We'll have the castor oil pack materials. We'll try it next time. Great. Super. What is the brand of algae-based omegas you recommend? You know, there's always new ones coming out. There was one called Opti-3 for a while. I don't know if they still have it. Nordic Naturals has one. There was one that I got at a health fair once. It's really pure, but really low dose and expensive, and I don't remember the exact name of it. If you look in your guide to the sweet spot, the supplement guide, I should mention a whole bunch of them in there. Donna, you ordered pure encapsulations chromate, but the capsules are 600 instead of 200. Any advice? Yeah, so you want to get on average 800-ish a day. You can take one 600 a day. The next day you could take two, the next day you could take one, you can alternate it, but just be creative in your math. Raw Revelations, thank you, Lynn, that was the one I like a lot. Nutravel is the name of the test, Sherry. Nutravel, from Genova Diagnostics. N-U-T-R-I-E-V-A-L, something like that. And then Body Bio is for the mineral testing. The zinc can only be made with, yeah, you can only do the taste tests with the liquids, and they have to be a particular dilution, otherwise they are going to all taste bitter. So, for example, when you get Body Bio, it tells you to mix some number of drops, like let's say it's 10 drops of the concentrated liquid in the bottle they give you, and then you fill the rest up, which is like 16 ounces, with water, or 8 ounces, something like that. And so you get the right dilution, and then you can taste test it. If you just take the drops direct, they're going to taste very bitter. If you look at something like Premier Research or Thorne, they both have a zinc tally, zinc assay, they call them. And you can actually do that with the liquid zinc, but they already have the right dilution. And so with the Premier's I think it was Thorne when I first started testing it, or Metagenics, one or the other, many, many decades ago. And I tested my zinc, and I'm like, whoa, I am deficient in zinc according to this test. So I started to replenish, and over the course of the next couple of months, that went away, and pretty much it doesn't show anymore. I may periodically test it, like if I'm feeling like a cold is coming on, or if I'm in an environment where everybody around me has a cold, and I'm going, I don't want to get sick, so I will do test it and then take. But most of the time it maintains, so I kind of like that test. Lynn just put in the link. Thank you, Lynn, for the NutriVal test. All right. Christina, my blood sugar often rises with exercise in the morning, sometimes up to 120, so I guess it has to do with my adrenal stress, cortisol. Should I exercise less or not in the morning? Yeah, so I would play around with it. I would play around with the timing and the intensity. If you have seriously compromised adrenals, you oftentimes can't get away with the same amount of exercise. So for me, if I go out for a run, you know, usually I am fasting. If my blood sugar goes up, if I like do a lot of bursts in the run and I push myself, then my blood sugar will go up a bit. If it comes right back down, it's no big deal. But sometimes it doesn't. And I go, okay, I overdid it. And then I may feel like really weak or lightheaded. And I go, oh, I know I overdid it. So we have to find that exact right amount of balance for yourself and also for your clients. What does it mean if all forms of zinc supplementation make someone nauseous? I mean, like it's a capsule or it's drops or it's even a tiny, tiny amount. Boy, that's a good question. I mean, everybody's a little bit different, so I'm not sure. Have you run into a lot of people like that? Is that you? Which forms have you taken? There are a lot of forms. It could mean that there's some issues going on with the stomach lining and it's aggravating the stomach lining. Lynn says, would something like a sun salutation work for early morning with adrenal? I think a sun salutation is a great thing to do in the morning because it really, it's just so the repetitive movement, the stretching, I mean, it's certainly not overtaxing for your adrenals. And anything that you do that involves a mindfulness component is going to really be supportive. So if you tend to have high cortisol in the morning, we were just guessing, we don't know, but if you tend to have high cortisol in the morning and you start your day with a mindfulness practice, movement, yoga movements, gentle movement, then you're going to get your body in that more, you know, parasympathetic state. Gail says it helps to take zinc with food to prevent nausea. Yeah, a lot of people can't take it on an empty stomach. It is kind of caustic and aggravating, but, you know, I'm assuming you meant taking it with food and no matter what you take, but that's a good point. I mean, I didn't ask that, so thank you, Gail. Yeah, a lot of people do get it. And there, in particular, I'm not bashing any one company, I used to use trace minerals all the time, but a lot of people have problems with that trace mineral zinc. I just think it's so concentrated. I mean, if they take it on an empty stomach, they're in trouble. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to go back. Excess copper might be part of the zinc issue. Well, it's balancing it. So, you know, the extra zinc may be needed. I mean, it could be a copper excess. Yeah, I guess. But it would be improving that when you take the zinc. So I'm not sure about that. What would it mean to feel weird in the stomach after taking ACV, like it's too heavy or hot? It could be that you have compromised lining, stomach lining, and it's not protecting you as well as it should, because the stomach lining should be nice and thick, and it should be able to protect against a pH of 2. And a 2 is like HCl is a 2. ACV is probably 5 in terms of acidity. So I would think that it probably means you should be looking at the stomach lining and seeing if there's some compromise there, and maybe working with things like slippery elm or DGL to help build that back up. Plant chain is another one, those mucilaginous plants. Good questions. Wow. All right, I'm going to go back to see if anybody has their hand up. Star 2 raises your hand, or put your hand up with the raise hand. I don't see any hands now. We'll go back to the questions and see if there's more. Okay, so Chris says, I have a brand new client with type 2 diabetes, just started the food protocol and lifestyle recommendations, fasting blood sugar 120, 140 after 2 hours of eating, injects 20 units of insulin mornings and 15 at night, also taking metformin and psychiatric prescriptions. Where do I start with tampering? You don't start tapering his diabetes meds at all. You start with all the things we teach you, and naturally you're going to see those numbers go down. So you just start with everything we teach in the sweet spot and insulin resistance. You go through all the lifestyle factors, the supplements, the foods, getting them off the glutens and getting them on the good foods, doing the elimination diet, getting off all the sugars, taking them through a 30-day metabolic reset and having them monitor. You're going to see is that those numbers are going to start to go down, and it could be very quickly. We've had people go taper down off insulin. Depends on whether they're type 1 or type 2. You said type 2. So if he's on insulin, he doesn't probably need it really. It's just really a matter of time to get that going. Now, what you do is I warn people if they're on insulin or any diabetic medication, I will say as soon as your fasting blood sugar goes down into the 80s, talk to your doctor about lowering your dose. In the 80s, 80s isn't too low, but once it's in the 80s, it could quickly go down 70, 60s, and also it means you're on too much medication. We want to get them on as little insulin as possible. This person's on a fair amount with 20 units and 15. You don't say whether it's long-acting or short-acting, but that's a lot of insulin, and the insulin's causing damage. So as far as tapering meds, you're going to do everything you know how to do. When those numbers start to come down and they start to go, you say, hey, it's going down, it's going down. I mean, you want to get them below 100, right? But as soon as it starts to go into the 80s, I would say check in with your doctor and make sure. Now, I've worked with people. I've worked with fasting with people. I've worked with just the diet with people who are on insulin and other diabetic medications, and we've seen it go down really quickly. I had one guy whose numbers were in the 220s, and he was on 3 oral diabetic agents. They were threatening to put him on insulin because it wasn't controlling. And within a week, his fasting blood sugar was in the 70s. A week. So keep on and make sure that their doctor is involved. But don't do anything different. Just do what you're doing. Barbara, I just got my personal labs done with my cholesterol panel. Everything went down from 277, still high at 244, except triglycerides increased from 82 to 152. What food changes can I make? What other labs can I look at for the correlations? Well, look at the triglycerides and the HDL. Generally speaking, if the triglycerides are high, it's a sugar issue, sugar carbohydrate issue. So I would be looking at your diet carefully and making sure that you've removed the carbohydrate foods, the sugars that can be converted into triglycerides. I would look at omega-3 fats, just because likely with the triglycerides at that level, you probably, I'm sure your HDLs are not in the right level because I usually like to have them 1-to-1. So you want to look there. And HDLs, and I would look at I would look at the sugars because that's where that's coming from, most likely. Yeah. All right. I'm going to refresh. Okay, good. And it's also hard to look at things in isolation. I want to see it in the full panel, which we will at some point. Christina, what's the difference between phosphate in a supplement, like when it comes in a multi, versus a liquid phosphorus? So if you're talking about like calcium phosphate, for example, that's usually in a combination of a phosphate molecule combined with the specific other mineral, right? And then a phosphorus is liquid. It's usually more of an ionic version of the phosphorus that will go right into the system. Yeah. And Lynn mentioned licorice is a demulcent that can help with the mucous membranes in the digestive system. But the thing is, you want to make sure that you don't have hypertension or your client doesn't have hypertension if you're recommending pure licorice. If they do, you can monitor really carefully. Just warn them to monitor really carefully. And if it starts to creep up and gets, you know, starting to go creeping up towards the uncomfortable range, then you back it off. But you can get a form of licorice called DGL, diglycerizinated licorice. If you happen to have low blood pressure, licorice is great because it can do both the stomach and raise the blood pressure. I don't remember her asking. Oh, I've noticed some clients with candida or FODMAP issues can't tolerate ACV. And it could be that the fermented foods will aggravate, will feed them. That's what Lynn said. That NutriVal is actually 500. I thought it was more. I thought it was 600. So, yeah, it is expensive. That's why I said. I generally don't run those unless I've worked with people. I work with people with the nutrient assessments, which you have access to, and I have them like paper pen, you know, symptomatically. That's why it's really important to understand what symptoms are of the particular nutrients so that you can get an idea of where some of those are. Get them on a really, really nutrient dense diet for a while. And then, you know, you can check the simple ones like D, everybody should be checking in the serum. I've recently tested K and A in the serum in people who I suspected, like somebody who I suspected had thyroid receptor resistance, and deficiency of A is an important one for that. So I had her test that. You know, some of the minerals are not really indicative, even though they're measured as electrolytes in the blood. They're not really indicative of body store and deficiency levels. So I really don't do those tests a lot. I will do something like an organic acid test because I want to look at a lot of things, and that will give me an indication of it, are there particular endotoxins that gut bugs are producing, metabolic imbalances in the Krebs cycle, ketone status. It will also give some neurotransmitter status, plus functional activity of some of the vitamins and minerals. Yeah. Okay. Chris says, I understand. So it doesn't matter how many meds. Should I monitor blood sugar and target less than 100? Then talk to doctor. Yeah. You get them, you target and you watch them start to going down. They could start talking to their doctor and say, look, I've lowered it by, you know, this much so far. And as it goes down, then they should have the doctor help them taper off. Yeah. Yeah, Terry, I know you do the assessments and you want a lower price test and join the club. We all want that. But right now, there are no lower price tests. Donna, I've completed 2 and 5 day fasts in the past. I've never noticed any decrease in belly fat. I've eaten pretty clean for the past few years. Triglycerides remain high. Do I check adrenal or liver issues? I lost my gallbladder due to a polyp. I'm wondering if my liver is overtaxed. Yeah, so having lost your gallbladder, that's an imbalance in your body. 1 2-day fast, you know, or 5-day fast is not necessarily going to decrease the belly fat, but you also have to look at what's going on there, right? Is your body storing fat in the belly due to insulin resistance, or is it due to high levels of cortisol? High levels of cortisol will increase belly fat. So it is a good idea to check the adrenals. The liver you can do on just a regular blood panel. I always recommend that everybody gets a standard blood panel right at the start just to screen for certain things. So a standard blood panel will have glucose, it'll have kidney function, it'll have liver function, lipids, usually very cursory thyroid, like a TSH, electrolytes, and then an anemia, CBC, that would show for anemia and all that. So certainly you can look at that. Lynn says SpectraCell is 400, so that might be worth looking at. It used to be 600, so that's come down a lot. Yeah, cool. All right, let's see if there's any more typed in. Nope, let's see if there's any more. Nobody wants to talk to me. I'm feeling lonely. Star 2 to raise your hand or click the raise hand button. And if you're trying to do that and I'm not seeing it, then just go ahead and type in the chat and say, hey, my hand's raised and what your name is, and I'll look you up. I see Debbie's on the line and Shannon and Jill and Lynn and Honeybeat and Dee. Oh, this is Donna, right? Honey. I don't know how to say your name. Mahoney. I don't know how to say your name. Sorry. You'll have to get on the line just to correct me. So I like talking to real people. So if you want, go for it. Donna, TSH, T3 or T4. Okay. So if you want to do a full thyroid panel, you've got to do all of that and then more. So TSH is what they'll always do. If the TSH shows up high, they will, or too low, they'll generally do a T4. And then, you know, think that that's enough. You really need to do TSH. I think total T4 and free T3, anti-thyroid globulin and thyroid peroxidase. Those are the ones that need to be done. Otherwise, you're not going to get enough information about a thyroid issue and you're going to be barking up the wrong tree perhaps for a long time. Yeah. Gail. Hypothyroidism, kidney issues, genetics, and estrogen therapy can all impact triglycerides, absolutely, as well as poor diet, obesity, and diabetes, just other things to look and deeply monitor. Yeah, well, low thyroid, good point, Gail, because low thyroid will affect cholesterol, and it'll affect triglycerides, it'll affect the way that the lipids are managed in the body, so we see that. Generally speaking, when I see the cholesterol go down and the triglycerides come up, I'm thinking it's more diet related or stress related. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Jill, full blood panel from Dr. Hopkins, which one? It depends on what you're asking about. Like there's a bunch of full, but he does a lot of stuff in his full blood panel, which is like $1,200. So that I don't think is necessary for everybody. But what I do, if you go to runmylabs.com, I've set up some panels for various purposes, and you can look there to see. I have there's a blood sugar panel, there's a keto panel, there's a general health panel, there's a basic plus thyroid, there's a complete thyroid, so you can look there. What are your thoughts with thyroid issues and low carbs? I mean, it's certainly, there's some documented evidence that on a keto diet that sometimes it affects the T4 to T3 conversion. Even in Mike's conversation with Dr. Hopkins, which we posted on, I think we did it during the keto challenge, and he was talking about how when you keep your antioxidant status up and your fiber status up, that you don't run into those same issues. I think that if somebody already has thyroid issues, you just have to monitor more carefully. And that's why he created that keto panel that we could have people run before doing a keto challenge and after. I go on record as I believe that the standard keto that's taught with all the animal fats and meat and all is dangerous for most people. It may be good short term, but not long term, and that we really need to have a healthier version. And there's a number of people out there now talking about it. I know Dr. Anna Kabeka calls it her keto green. Somebody named Stephanie Estima calls it her healthy keto, not healthy keto. We call it healthy keto. What does she call it? She has another name for it, but there's several people who call it. Now, some of the people who call it healthy keto, when you go to their site, you're still seeing pictures of bacon cheeseburgers. So, you know, it's what's your definition? And you really have to optimize a diet to a person, right? Some people may need higher carb than others. Some people may not tolerate carbs because of some gut stuff going on, right? They just don't have the ability to break down the carbohydrate. You know, some people who think that they're gluten intolerant are actually carb intolerant. So there's a lot of things that go in. This is not a one size fits all type of thing. We have to do a complete history. We have to look at whatever labs we have, determine if there's additional labs we need, order as few labs as possible. Hear me, few labs as possible, because I just don't think, I think that too many people are jumping in and running labs without actually using their history-taking skills. And some people don't have history-taking skills. And that's the process we teach. Those of you who are at Shine, we went through this over and over, that we need to go, we need to look at assessments. We need to look at connecting with the person and really getting the compliance connection, because sometimes you can come up with the best plan laid out ever and they don't follow it and they think they're following it. So really knowing how to connect and communicate is super important. Coming up with a plan based on all that, you know, what's in the labs, the assessments is huge. I went through that at Shine. What's involved in assessments, asking people the right questions is the starting point. And you can get 90% of what you need to help somebody, in some cases 100, just by asking the right questions. It's really super important. Yeah. Where do I find a brief tutorial about how to interpret the Dutch test? Go to their site, their website. They have videos there. I mean, we have tons of those. We have cases and cases and cases of me going through them in NEPT, but you don't have access to that unless you're in NEPT. So you can go to the Dutch site and you can see what they have talked about. Okay. Debbie, have you ever helped a patient repair their gut after chemo for breast cancer? My friend had such severe diarrhea, goes down to 88 pounds. You know, each person is individual. So whether I've had experience or not doesn't mean that I would have experience with this other person. She needs to be on a not a fasting type diet, not a cleanse type diet, but a rebuild type diet, looking at what she needs, healing the gut with things that heal the gut that we know about that heal the gut. And, eating right, not just eating for calories, right? And really getting into the spiritual and emotional aspects as well, because a lot of times people are living in fear after they've had chemo. And it really affects the gut big time because it keeps them in sympathetic dominant mode instead of parasympathetic. So I would highly recommend for just about everybody you're working with is really look at how do you work with the parasympathetic nervous system? How do you stimulate it? How do you get the vagus nerve running? There's some good books I've been reading on that. I did a really, I thought a good talk on the polyvagal theory at Shine, and that was a really good overview of how do we help the vagus nerve? Why is it so important? The ventral and the dorsal, and she needs a lot of connection and communication to activate her ventral vagus, and she needs a lot of support for healing her leaky gut. So I would let go of have you ever helped somebody, because there's always that one person, and when you figure out what they need specifically, right, what they need, gut lining repair, nutrients, right? Sometimes IV nutrients are going to be really, really helpful to get this person going again. Things that activate stomach acid, so bitters and I'm not a big fan of taking HCL unless I really know the person and I can really identify that they need it, because it can be aggravating, but I wouldn't do that at this point. I'd be building, all the building herbs. If you go to our Clinical Mastery of the Digestive System, we have lots and lots of resources in there, in the modules for healing that. So we do that. Patty, client only wants to start with one meal to change the diet. What would you suggest when they're overwhelmed? Start with a good breakfast. Really important. Start with a good breakfast. If they're intermittent fasting and they're skipping breakfast, whatever that first meal of the day is, for a lot of people who are debilitated, intermittent fasting and skipping breakfast doesn't work, but skipping the dinner meal does. So starting with the basic stuff. And I have a book called Hormone Hacking Breakfast Menus. Yeah, we have a link to it somewhere in the sweet spot, but if you go to hormonehackingbreakfastmenus.com, download that and just get us started eating those five components. The five components of a healthy breakfast are also a five components of any healthy meal. So I would say looking at fiber, fat, omega-3s, protein, plant-based is fine. People think they have to eat bacon and eggs to get protein. No. Plant-based is fine, or organic lean pastured type of meats. I would keep them off dairy and eggs, and at least initially, dairy, eggs, and gluten, of course. And so it's fiber, fat, the greens would be another one, fiber, fat, protein, greens, and some sort of a probiotic containing food, right? So if you've got that fiber, fat, protein, greens, and probiotics, and you can go there. Yeah, you're welcome. A patient with severe PMDD has worsened over the last 2 months. It comes with lots of anxiety, and she has a therapist already to the sweet spot. She's a terrible diet, and I recommended her try Chaseberry in the interim. Any other supplements? I'm really not a fan of recommending supplements unless I have a complete history. That's not a complete history. PMDD, meaning I'm not good with acronyms either. What do you mean by PMDD? And I'll comment further. Debbie says she gained up to 95 pounds, but she's getting ready to start radiation. And really making sure her liver is up to speed. Things like dandelion tea can be helpful. Milk thistle to protect the liver, super helpful. Hawthorn berry, which is good for protecting the liver and protecting the heart, because radiation is going to put a burden on everything. I would look at, there's a book, I can't remember the name of it, that she has a lot of adjunctive support for people who are opting to do the chemo radiation, but what can you do in addition? Christy Funk, I think it's called Breasts, the Owner's Manual. It gets very detailed in terms of all the different options that people can go for, but it gives you stuff that people can do to support themselves when they're doing radiation and chemo. Martha, I'm not ready to present client, waiting on more lab work. Client sent me last year's labs. I'm working on the large amount of history taking. So I put all the totals in a certain format. I'm not sure what you mean, but if you mean like the labs, you're in NEPT, you have access to the master tracker. I would put all her labs in the master tracker. You also have access to blood chem software. I would put it in there. You know, as you get them, you put it in there. But totals is not what I'm, totals don't help. It's individual readings that we really need to look at. Lynn says, my mom just finished chemotherapy. I've been trying to work with her on this. Maybe that book would help her because it has somewhat of a Western stand, in that she shares what all the Western options are, but she also shares what some of the options are, the adjunctive things that you can do. And maybe people who are very, doctor-oriented, Western-oriented would want to hear that from a breast surgeon, right? Jill, if they're really sick, would you build and fast? Yeah, that's what you could do. You could do short, fast building. You can, most people can fast. I mean, they should all be fasting 12 hours a night, but you should could get them to 14 and then 16, and like eating within a certain window. So they have all the healing windows. But then with the builds, you've got to make sure then that the meals are satiating and have enough nutrients and calories. I'm not a big fan of oils, but in cases where I'm trying to build somebody like that, sometimes I do. It's, I had somebody that I worked with many, many, many years ago. I never followed up, so I have no idea what actually happened to her. But she had a cancer diagnosis, and she was getting really emaciated and cachexic. And I created a shake for her where she had a good amount of protein in there. That was back in the day when we didn't have as many choices for proteins. I think it was an Ultra Clear or an Ultra, one of the Metagenics ones, because they were one of the first to have those protein powders. I had her on that shake, and I had her put some coconut oil and maybe some avocado and lots of greens powders in there. And we beefed up the shake so that it got her to be able to keep on weight, and that really helped her a lot. Chris, in the case of severe malnutrition, would you recommend introducing a meal replacement like a high-quality protein powder that you can recommend? Absolutely. And that's going to be very dependent on the person, right? So some of those protein powders have a lot of extra ingredients. And if somebody has diarrhea, they may have some sensitivities or FODMAP sensitivities. So you want to start with something really simple. And I oftentimes recommend Sacha Inchi, because it's just such a thing that we don't eat in this part of the world, and most cultures don't. So Sacha Inchi is unlikely to have developed an allergy to it. So I'll start with the Sacha Inchi protein. It's less expensive than a lot of others. Some people don't tolerate pea protein. It causes them gas. Some people don't tolerate rice protein. And we have a lot of concerns with the arsenic levels in rice these days. There's pumpkin seed protein. There's different ones, and I think I would recommend usually folks try a few and see what they tolerate. If they get gassy and bloaty, then don't do it. I personally kind of muscle test myself before I do it, and I traveled a lot, and the place I went to travel, they didn't have a whole lot of good protein sources at each meal, which to me is greens, and they didn't have like huge amounts of greens at each meal, and I just ate a lot of, I ate some salad and some steamed vegetables, but not a lot. There wasn't a lot. I mean, the steamed vegetables were like, I'm picking through trying to pull out the mushrooms and the zucchini and pushing away, a lot of the heavy starches so I can get some of that stuff. But when I came home, I really felt like drawn that I needed more sufficient nutrition. So I've been drinking smoothies. And then at lunch, after I drank my smoothie and had my yogurt, I was still kind of hungry. So I basically made an ice cream from protein powder, and I muscle test myself. I have like 7 or 8 different kinds of protein powder, and the ones that showed up today was an almond protein and the Sun Warrior collagen peptides one. And I put that in the blender. I added some cocoa powder to it, raw cacao powder to it, some cordyceps, some coconut and cashew milk powder, by the way, if you don't know about those. New one is from, what's the name of that company? Z Natural Foods has a new thing called cashew milk powder. And it's yummy, and it tests okay. It tests really great for me. It has a nice taste, and it gives it a little creaminess. So I put that and coconut milk powder in the blender. I put a whole slew of ice cubes, a tiny, tiny bit of water, and some frozen zucchini, and I blended it up. It was so delicious. I didn't even have to add any sweetener like stevia or anything like that. So those are ways to help people to get some extra nutrition in them. And it tastes really good. And it's on a hot day, so, it's getting hot again today. So I ate that as ice cream, and it was yummy. Yeah, really yummy. Premenstrual dysphoric disorder. Okay. Just too many. PMS is what I would typically, but it's when the person has the dysphoria, the depression part of it, they call it that. Okay, yeah. And let me look back to see what your question was. Because a lot of times that happens with... So here's the thing. When somebody has the depression part of PMS, I'm concerned about progesterone because it's been found that it can be stimulated by progesterone. So unless you get some hormone testing done, I wouldn't give her chasteberry, because chasteberry is actually going to raise the progesterone. So you can do a Dutch test and see how that comes. you know, the diet is going to be super important. At least get her off caffeine, because that can aggravate the premenstrual. Caffeine, and it also aggravate fibrocystic breasts. Is there something that she can do? B6 comes to mind, right? With a lot of anxiety, she may have that. She may need some stomach acid rebuilding to get some of the protein, the amino acids, so that she can calm down the anxiety. But teach her some vagal nerve things. Teach her to do long breath, slow breaths with a longer exhale than inhale. And check out some of the books on the vagus nerve. There's one called Accessing the Healing Power of the Vagus Nerve. There's another one right now that I'm reading on strategies for the vagus nerve. There's one on vagus nerve for therapists, I think. So I just look that stuff up, and there's some good stuff with practical strategies that people can actually do, right? So the breathing is super important, and some of the stuff we talked about at Shine, super, super important things. Humming. Humming om. The gargling and the singing and all those things to activate vagus nerve are important. Let's see. Martha, Master Tracker, I've done totals of the history taking. Great. Super. Master Tracker and Blood Count. And in the Master Tracker, Martha, and anybody else who's in our, he's one of our ERC coaches or is one of our NEPT coaches, you'll see in the Master Tracker, there's the symptom scorecard tracker page that will actually tally up for you and let you track that a long time. So that's a good one. Let's see. The name of the protein, there were two that I mentioned. There was Sacha Inchi, which is one that's usually very, very common. There's several brands that make it. Organic Sacha Inchi powder, S-A-C-H-A-I-N-C-H-I. And then there's the one I use today, which has a lot of ingredients in it because it's meant to be a collagen support. And that's from Sun Warrior. They have a collagen support one. And then another one I used was an almond, I can't remember what the name of the brand was, but almond. You just have to look for organic, you know, simple ingredients when you're trying to start people off, especially if they have sensitive systems. Let's see. Thrive has macadamia nut powder that is really more liquid. I don't know about that one. What brand of coconut milk powder? Z Natural Food is where I get my coconut milk powder. Z Natural Foods. And get the organic dairy-free one. Nanette says, I have access to macadamia nuts and flowers cheap. However, my throat does like them raw. Doesn't like them raw, but I do okay if they're toasted. Why might that be? The oil's supposed to be better. I mean, macadamia nut is one that is a little bit, is okay to toast it. I wouldn't toast it in oil because they have less instability in the oils because there's less omega-3s in there, very little. I don't know why your throat doesn't like them raw. I don't know if you're chewing them enough. Hard to tell. Amazing Grass has a collagen support too. I've done that one and I'm just out of it right now. You can't do them raw. Interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting, right? There may be an enzyme inhibitor that's causing a problem. I know it's interesting because my husband is allergic to soy and he's allergic to raw garbanzos. So for example, sprouted garbanzos or like garbanzo bean flour that they make into pancakes in a Indian restaurant. He can't do that even after it's cooked. The only way he can eat garbanzo beans is if they're cooked, fully cooked. So it's interesting. What's USD $507? What is that, Chris? Because there's a lot of links here, so I don't know. The products, you know, that's certainly not the products. The Sun Warrior is about 25 or 30. The Sacha Inchi is usually, you know, 15 to 20. And the coconut milk powder is usually, oh, you might have seen one of their bulk ones and it's like 50 pounds or something. Right? The coconut milk powder is very inexpensive as well. No, you're looking someplace wrong, Chris. And it maybe it's in bulk and it's 100 pounds. Yeah. Yeah. If you go to rawfoodworld.com or you go to Amazon and just look up Sacha Inchi, it should not be $507. I buy it for my son all the time and send it to him. And, you know, it's like $15, $20. Okay. Okay. Yeah, good. It was 100 pounds or something, Chris. All right. Let me see if there's any other questions on the chat here. Okay, let's see. Any hands up? No hands up. Star 2 raises your hand. Raise your hand. I'm happy to talk to you. Otherwise, we're close to our end. The one I shared is $23. Yeah, that's much better. Modest Milk. Modest Milk. I'll have to write that one down and look that one up. Modest Milk. Modest Milk. M-Y-L-K. Okay, good. The coconut milk powder, and I think the cashew might have a little bit of tapioca maltodextrin, but it's organic and, you know, it's not a problem. Sure. Terry, this is amazing. What's amazing, Terry? Tell me. Tell me what's amazing. Modestmilk.com. That looks interesting. I want to see that one. I'm going to click that link. Oh, it's a liquid. How could they do that? Is it pasteurized? Because how would they send that out? Sell it. Modest Milk is now healthier, easier, and tastier than ever. Dairy-free nut milk that's free from carrageenans, emulsifiers. We only use the real stuff. Homemade milk. Oh, it's actual. Can you buy this over the counter? Or do you have to buy this at the store? Or is it cream? It looks almost like a nut. Well, I'll have to look at that more closely. It looks like it's more of a nut butter kind of base that you would just add water to. And by the way, that is an easy way to make nut milk, is to take nut butter, which is already ground up. But it's so easy to make nut milk. I'm not a big fan, or I don't need to have my nut milk strained. So if I'm going to make a nut milk, I just throw it in the blender. But the reason I bought the cashew was because I wanted to try it, but it's also great for traveling, right? So you don't have to, you're not carrying a blender in your suitcase. I used to, but now that they don't let you do a carry-on with a blender, I don't like it. Maltodextrin, corn maltodextrin is, tapioca, you know, it's tapioca is a plant, it's organic, and it depends. So maltodextrin can be really bad. Yeah, you gotta be careful, because mostly it's corn, from GMO corn. Terry, you're amazing. Well, thank you, Terry. I'm glad you're enjoying this. This is my favorite thing to do, by the way, is to just get on calls and answer mostly practitioner calls, but I like doing client calls as well. I just get to go deeper and get more geeky with practitioners. Thank you. It's a paste, and it's a paste that you just add water and blend, but you still would need a blender for it. So that's why I kind of like the powders better, because you can take a shaker jar or just, you know, go to the store and buy a Kavita and drink it, and then have an empty jar with a lid, and you can put water in there with the powder and shake it up. Coconut milk powder does better if it's warm water or hot water. It kind of can clump, if not, but you still do it. You just have to shake it a lot. The other thing I carry when I'm traveling is I carry a little, it's like a stick blender, but not the big ones. It's just a little, it's like a frother, and I found it on Amazon. I found several different kinds. The one I like the best is one that one of our clients had, and she showed me, but it has a little stand, so you can have it in your kitchen and have it on a little stand. And I just pick it up and stick it into the whatever I'm trying to blend up. You can do it with protein powder, so you don't have to use your blender. So that's a good thing to do as well, and they're really easy to throw in your suitcase. Oh, the ingredients for Modest Milk, cashew milk base. Cashews, coconut oil, arrowroot flour, Himalaya. You know, if you go to the cashew milk, let's click the cashew milk one on where she did it here. No, that's the Sacha Inchi. Cashew milk, Z Natural Foods. I want to read the ingredients on that to compare it to the other. Ingredients. So it's raw, vegan, gluten-free, chemical-free, non-GMO, and kosher. So all of those good things. And the ingredients are raw cashews and inulin. So this doesn't have anything else. So inulin is basically a fiber, a prebiotic fiber. Some people are sensitive, so if you have FODMAP sensitivities, go carefully with it. But it's pretty clean, right? Raw cashews and inulin. If you look at their coconut milk powder, be careful because they do have one that has dairy, so don't get the one that has dairy in it because then you'll have a reaction if you're sensitive. Oh, no, that's not the one. Coconut milk. Coconut milk powder, organic. All right. 100% certified organic. Dairy-free, good for people who are sensitive to sodium caseinate. And the ingredients are, I think this is the one that has the, yeah, so it's organic dehydrated coconut milk and organic tapioca maltodextrin derived from organic yucca root and organic acacia fiber. So, you know, you can check it out yourself to see if it works for you. It's like, I'm going to put the link in there. It's $11.24 on sale right now for a whole pound of it. So guys, it's worth it. Even if it doesn't work for you, give it to somebody. It's not a big expense. And you can find that, you know, especially I'm always trying things out for my clients. I want to make sure that, that something is going to work before I recommend it to a client. So I ordered the cashew milk to see, and it's phenomenal. So it's a really nice way to do it. So I think I like it better than that Modest Milk thing. Plus it's in powder, so easy to travel with. Make sure that when you buy these things in powder form that you always, you close the Ziploc in it very carefully, but make sure you don't get any powder in the little zippy things. Otherwise it won't close all the way and you can get moisture in there. Or I take, mason jars. I just pour everything in a mason jar and then I cut the label off this and then I tape it on the jar so I know exactly what it is. I still have all my ingredients. I still have the URL of where to order it. So that's a really good way to do it. Yeah. And it's a great way. Yes. So you've got to be careful if you're overweight that you don't use too much of these powders, but this, you can actually put a lot of good stuff in there and you can put, you know, more than they say in terms of the powder. You can fortify a smoothie or you can fortify some of your things to get some extra calories and extra weight. So tapioca is always safe with gut issues. I will never say always about anything. I mean, I can take any food and say I found somebody across my years of working with people that has a problem with it. So you have to check it. Yeah, you have to check it. But it's a small amount. I mean, it's 0.2% or something as opposed to the rest of it is coconut. So it's just very little. So yeah, anytime you're taking something like coconut, which clumps in the cold weather, they have to add something to make it not clump so much. And that's what they add that for. It's yummy. I could just eat it out of the bag, quite frankly. Not a good idea because it, you know, you can get a lot of calories that way. All right. So we're almost done. We're at 5:15. I have, let me see. Yep. We have a few more minutes. I would like a few minutes to finish this for a bio break before I go on to 3 more calls today. So who else? Any other questions before we hit the road? Let me go back here. Instant Health Seminar. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. There's nothing that's good for everybody. Nothing. Even water. Too much water, right? Can hurt somebody. Depends on the type of water. You know, we really, really just have to look at that. What do I think about fillers and supplements like silicon dioxide? You know, I know Thorne uses some of their supplements have silicon dioxide. I think that it could be a problem, for some people, but I think for the most part, I don't know of any specific issues with silicon dioxide. I mean, of course you want everything. What other vagal nerve books? I just look it up. I don't remember. Well, wait a minute. I have my phone here with my Audible app, and I download them on Audible, so I'll tell you in a minute. Another great book, and I'm going to bring in a friend who's a psychologist and wrote this amazing book, and she's going to do a training on it. So if you guys want to read this book, it's amazing. 90 Seconds to a Life You Love. And it's about helping people who have, you know, anxiety and PTSD and all this, and it's how to deal with those uncomfortables. I'm mentioning that because it's right there on my iPad, on my, what do you call it, Audible. So the other one is Activate Your Vagus Nerve by Dr. Navis Habib. Activate Your Vagus Nerve. And the other one is The Polyvagal Theory in Therapy. The Polyvagal Therapy in Therapy. And then another one that someone just recommended today, and I watched his TED Talk, and I was like, okay, I want his audiobook. It's called The Circadian Code. And if you go and watch, I'll give you the link to this TED Talk, which I thought was amazing. Let me find it. I had it here earlier. All right. It was from, let me just look up. It was from Laura. Okay, here we go. I'm going to put this in. This was an amazing TED Talk. And this is a different one. Actually, let me give you this one. Okay, and then somebody else gave me a TED Talk. This was a really good one on the effect of our thoughts and our emotions on the physical structure of the heart, which implies that we can physically change the shape and the anatomy, not just the physiology and the biochemistry, but the anatomy of organs in the body based on thoughts. Let me give you this other one. It's The Circadian Code. And he has, let me see if I can find that TED Talk. It was another TED Talk by a doctor or some, yeah, PhD doctor, Sachin Panda, P-A-N-D-A. It's called The Circadian Code is the book that he wrote, which I got on audio, but I'm going to give you the link to the TED Talk because I wanted to watch the TED Talk first to see if it was here. I'm going to share it. Okay, let me look it up. If I shut this one, I should be able to. Okay, how do I do this? I have a hard time on Facebook when I'm not on my computer, but I'm trying to do it on my phone. When I'm not on my phone, I want to do it on my computer because I can just copy paste the link. Ah, here we go. Nope, that's not sure. Here we go. And this is, there's two links. One is his TED Talk. I haven't watched the second link because it's 55 minutes long, but this one, I just thought it was amazing. Okay. This one is, his TED Talk on the circadian rhythm, and he has some very specific, awesome science on it. And then this is another one. And I don't know if Maria's on the call, but Maria Horseman, our resident, fitness expert, gave me these links. And I love to exercise, and I listen to audiobooks on, get this, triple speed. So I can get through a lot of audiobooks. And if I really, whoops, that's the wrong one. If I really find that, see if I can find this one. Okay, here we go. I think this one is the one I want. If I find that I need to listen again, I usually do need to listen again, that I've gone through it once, twice, and it's getting in my subconscious as well. So these are on the circadian code. Okay, and that's the name of his book as well. All right, let's see. Biology of belief is great as well. Absolutely agree. Yeah. But the vagus nerve and the circadian rhythm and all that's so tied in to why people that we see are saying that they're doing quote unquote everything right and they're eating well and they're still not getting well. And so much of their thought process and their programmed response to stress is just hurting them, and it's hurting them biologically, and anatomically, physiologically, and biochemically. So the vagus nerve is, like, I think it's their wave of the future. Same thing with the circadian rhythm. Yeah, Mike Mutzel talked about the circadian rhythm as Shine, and at Shine I also talked about the polyvagal. So any of you who have not been there, I don't know when we're taking this down. I think the live videos are coming up soon, and then they'll be more expensive, but you can still get the recordings from Shine, the replays of the live stream. Shine, LIVECONFUENCE.com. If you go to shinelifeconference.com, I'll put it here. You can still get like $97. You can get all the handouts and the replays, and it's only up for a month after Shine, so you'll have it till the end of October. You'll have that access there, and if you want to upgrade there to the edited version of the videos where you'll have access to the membership site and find them, it's like an extra $200. It was well worth it. If you missed Shine, you missed a really amazing conference, a super amazing conference, because so many great speakers. Well, we had Mike Mutzel, we had Anna Kabeko, we had Tom O'Brien. We had Steph Jackson did an awesome talk on keto and the microbiome and how to prevent the microbiome issues, and talked a lot about resistant starch and all that. And then Tricia Nelson talked a lot about what he handled all the time is why people can't get well because they can't follow because they have these emotional eating things and what kind of stuff you could do. So it was a great conference. I was so excited to be there. And my polyvagal was a brand new presentation I'd never done before. I talked about keto, healthy keto, lots of good stuff. I don't remember. It's a blur. it was great, but it was exhausting. But yeah, Mike's talk was always awesome, awesome, awesome. And so everybody's talks were awesome. I thought it was just a great conference overall. Yeah, really high quality. So we're ready to go unless there's any other last questions. Use your last call, like you're at the bar, right? Last call. Okay, last call for questions. I'll check the chat. I already checked the Q&A. I already checked that. Last call. So, guys, if you liked this, yay. Make sure you come to the office hours calls as well, because it's similar to this, and that there'll be one in 2 weeks. I know that as new IRSPT folks, you got 5 months worth of those, so that extends out. Keep posted on the Facebook group. You get so much support there from an amazing community. And if you want to consider, you know, looking at our full program, we actually have some new options. So, you know, keep your eyes open over the next few weeks. We're planning on doing a webinar about some of that stuff that you can move to if, you know, what's your next step after IRSPT if you're not ready to dive in for the full 2-year certification program. So thank you guys so, so, so much. And I appreciate you guys. Let's go out and make this world a better place. We're already doing it. And the more we learn and the more we learn how to be effective in communicating with clients and getting them to take action, the healthier this world's going to be and the more they're going to be demanding this kind of care, and they're going to be seeking you out. So much love to all of you. Mwah, bye-bye. I'm going to open up your lines so I can hear your voices, because I'm sorry, I just can't go through a whole call without it. All right. Bye, everybody. Say goodbye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you. Thank you.